through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Welcome into Tom, Jake, and Stacy. We have a great show planned for you today. First day of spring training, we're going to be speaking with Jared Kelnick, Mariners phenom, coming up at 1 o'clock today, so we're definitely looking forward to that. We've spoken to a couple of young pups in this organization. Stacy and I spoke with Justin Dunn a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. That was a lot of fun, so we're going to plan on talking to Jared over the phone coming up at 1 o'clock. Mike Salk will be in at 12:30, as he is every single day. But we start with something that I think we've overlooked a little bit in our quest to blueprint this Seahawks team and get them back to the Super Bowl. We know that free agency is coming up. We know that the draft is going to be here later on. But we have this small issue of Seahawks cap casualties that we need to get to. And there's a handful of guys that we need to discuss. Which of these guys do we keep and why? You want to take it from there, Jake?
Yeah, it's really interesting when you look at some of these names, because I think there is a more obvious conversation as to why some of these names are on the list. And then there's a couple of these guys where you really go back and forth and say, all right, I would initially say I would keep them on the roster, but maybe there is a good reason for the Seahawks to move on and let these guys go. And so I think as we're talking through this, we'll ultimately come to our decisions and thoughts as to why we would think they should be kept or they should the Seahawks should move on from these players. But there's a couple thoughts here. You have these cap casualties, and I know the Seahawks have tremendous cap space, but you want to try and get as much cap space as possible here, as you're, you know, in a defensive line rich free agency. That's one of your biggest needs, and that could help you tremendously. And then also the conversation we had yesterday, how much could you get away with? And some of these, you know, decisions here are trying to figure out if you could get away, you know, could you survive and get to a Super Bowl when moving on from these players? And the five that come up, KJ Wright, Justin Britt, DJ Fluker, Ed Dixon, and Bradley McDougal. Let's start with Justin Britt, because Justin Britt to me is really a key piece of it. One of our five pieces to helping the Seahawks get back to the Super Bowl is addressing the offensive line. And Justin Britt, I think, would be a guy that I would love to have here as the starting center for the Seahawks. But in terms of his cap number and the amount of money that he's going to make, which is around $11 million, his cap number or his cap hit is going to be somewhere around $7 or $8 million. That's a pretty big number that I think for Justin Britt coming off an ACL that I don't think the Seahawks have the luxury of just, you know, eating. I think that they have to make a decision here with Justin Britt and either try and restructure his deal or walk away from him altogether.
Yeah, if I'm reading this correctly, so this is from Over the Cap, if you guys ever want to look it up yourself, but the cap savings for Justin Britt, this is a pre-June 1st cut, would be $8.75 million. So that does free up a lot of space for you. The question I have with Justin Britt is what you do at center if you do cut him.
The question is now, okay, so you rely on Joey Hunt or Ethan Posick. Those are the two that you would be in line for, which obviously, Stacy, by your
face, is not something you're super fired up about.
You
know, I like both of those guys. Joey Hunt played really well in relief of Britt, but I think Britt is clearly your best center.
No question. And now, Joey Hunt played well in relief, but he also got put on his back a couple times in a game, right? Like, every game there was going to be moments where Joey was going to get, you know, put on his back against elite-level talent, and that's something that you don't want to have and something you don't want to bank on happening every single game that you're walking into. That's not a situation I would love.
It will if you're saving $8 million.
Potentially, and Ethan Posick is kind of that outlier. I look at Posick as potentially being that Justin Britt of a guy who played tackle, it didn't work out for him there, tried to move him into guard, and maybe center all along has been his best position if he's fully planning on an offseason where he's playing at that center position. I want Justin Britt back. I would love for them to restructure his deal and to make so that it makes more sense to keep him around, because I love the leadership that he brings, and I think he's a good player, but that's too big of a number for them to hold on to him.
Let's take a vote.
Okay.
Let's take a vote on each one of these guys. What do you say?
Okay, let's do it.
I say do not cut Justin Britt.
Go. Okay.
I would say restructure Justin Britt's deal.
Oh, I can vote that.
Yeah, if it's cut or if it's cut or keep, I'm saying cut. But I would like to restructure Britt's deal. This is the only one that I think you could restructure.
Well, you're saying keep then. It's cut or keep.
He's saying
keep.
So if it's cut or keep, I'm saying cut. You need the cap space.
But if it's priorities, he'd take restructure if you can before you cut.
Absolutely.
All right, I'm saying cut. I have faith in Joey Hunt and Ethan Posick.
And to reiterate what Jake said, so Justin Britt, the reason that he's the first on here and kind of the toughest decision is he would have the most cap savings.
Yes, and then the next guy, KJ Wright. What would you guys say about KJ Wright?
I would say keep. I mean, look, if I could restructure all these guys, well, except for, look, did we already go through the list here? You already said.
Yes.
Okay. KJ Wright, Justin Britt, those would be the two guys I think I would try to restructure. But if we're doing cut or keep, I would keep KJ Wright, try to get him to take less, but if he won't take it, I guess let him walk.
I think the tough thing with KJ Wright, and I know we were talking about this before the show as we were trying to kind of iron out our thoughts, and I'm still fixed on this. First of all, I think KJ Wright had a good 2019 season. Secondly, I wonder what they do at linebacker without that. You drafted two linebackers. You drafted Cody Barton and Ben Burkervin. The latter didn't get a ton of playing time, would presumably be outside linebacker. Cody Barton was originally, I think, intended to back up Bobby Wagner, be your middle linebacker first before he'd be an outside linebacker. Ended up playing in place of Michael Kendrick, so he played at that Sam spot anyways. But I just wonder if the team loves their options there over KJ Wright. Do you go into 2020 and take another linebacker where you draft three linebackers in 2 years?
Well, you could. The thing is, it's hard because KJ Wright has a 7.5 cap savings if you cut him. So that's a significant amount. And, you know, KJ, here's the hard part that I go back and forth with. I don't think the Seahawks are going to walk away from KJ Wright because he had a very productive year last year. And he had one of his best years statistically. He adds a ton of leadership to that locker room. And at the end of the season, you started to see KJ play more like the KJ we all know in terms of reacting quickly, diagnosing plays, and making big plays. If you remember those two huge back-to-back hits he had blowing up a screen on George Kittle, you know, those type of plays were starting to happen more frequently for KJ at the end of the year. So maybe KJ in this next year is going to be at his healthiest for one more season. The other side of it I do say is that there was a significant difference in speed. KJ just did not have the same speed, and that's something that if you save 7.5 on the cap and you can get younger, you can get faster, that is something that I think you do really have to consider. And how big is that drop-off going to be, if any, if you walk away from KJ Wright? So it's not as clear-cut of a decision. I ultimately say keep, because I think you don't really have anything that you're excited about replacing him with at this point.
Well, you don't have it yet. I just want to ask this question to both of you. If you're looking ahead to the draft and there's a guy that you think you're going to get like down the line that nobody else is going to have their eye on in like the first or second round, say to replace KJ, does that factor into your decision making?
Of course it does. But
okay,
you know,
well, I mean, how do we know that they don't have their eyes on somebody?
We don't. We don't know anything that they're saying. We're saying from what we would do. I think that KJ right now is a guy that you keep. He's a key leadership piece of your team. And I think there are other bigger issues that these guys have to go address, particularly on the defensive line, that cornerback spot, and the offensive line. I think those issues need to be addressed, you know, first before they think about replacing KJ Wright, unless they feel really good about their succession plan.
All right, who's next?
Next on the list would
Fluker.
Be Fluker. Yes, Fluker saves you 3.6 on the cap. And Fluker, to me, obviously we love DJ Fluker and stability reasons. I would love to keep him around in terms of continuity, like Pete Carroll had said in his postseason press conference. But the reality is DJ Fluker, you know, everybody talks about how great of a run blocker he is. He can move bodies because he's a huge human. He's a big human being, but he cannot move as well as he did in 2018. He just really can't get to the double teams or to the second level like you need him to. And so I would feel much more comfortable letting him walk and trying to replace him with a Jamarco Jones or try and find another guy in free agency at that guard position.
You know, the more interesting thing that Pete Carroll said during his final press conference of the season, we've gone over this before, but he said he wanted to keep consistency among most of the offensive line. It's hard to tell whether he means that with starters or whether that means he has faith in the guys they have coming down the line. Like, does it mean that he really likes DeMarco Jones and Phil Haynes and he wants to see what they have? Or does it mean he wants to keep as many starters that they currently have as possible?
Well, those guys haven't really played together all that much.
Well, they have over, not as a one whole cohesive unit, but like guys like DJ Fluker, those are guys that ideally, in the ideal world, that you would want to keep around because he's been there for two seasons. So when you talk about continuity, he's had two seasons there, a third under Pete Carroll, what he's talking about from that post-season press conference, that's what Pete Carroll's talking about. Having a guy in year three, you know what you're going to get out of him. That's comfortable.
I think it's tempting for a team like Seattle with the coaches they have, with Pete Carroll's philosophy, to keep DJ Fluker because he is a big guy. He's your biggest lineman. He can move bodies. He does perform better with run blocking, and that's the kind of offense you want. I think the problem is that maybe what a lot of fans are calling for, and who knows if this is also what a guy like Russell Wilson wants to see, is if you need better pass blocking, he hasn't excelled as much there. Again, though, it's hard to separate him from the success you've had in the run the last 2 years.
It is, but like I said, when you talk about being able to walk away from guys at the right time, I think DJ is just, as a guy, he's been injured at different points during the season and also is not getting to the second level. In 2019, he was not getting the second level like you would want him to get to. So I just think that there are some moves that they can make that strategically they can go younger, they can improve in their pass protection, and I think that could be one move with DJ Fluker. The other two...
Keep or cut, though?
I would say cut for
all
me.
Right. I'm cutting, too. I'm a DeMarco Jones guy.
Now, Stacey, did you say one?
Yeah, I'm gonna say I just feel bad about it because I really like DJ.
Well, I love DJ.
So we got two keeps and a cut quickly. Ed Dixon and Bradley McDougal.
Ed Dixon's a no-brainer to me. I think He's barely played here. He's been injured pretty much the whole time he's been here. A great human being. I really like Ed Dixon. Unfortunate that he hasn't been able to be here or been healthy. But I would say you should cut him, and I think it should have already been done.
I don't know what they're waiting on. Yeah, I agree. It's not even that I think you should. It's that I just have a hard time not seeing them do it. He's had the weirdest tenure in Seattle. Was originally brought in to hopefully he can be kind of our starting tight end. Because he was one of the priority free agent signings they had, one of the early ones. And then he ended up just barely playing with this team.
McDougal, quickly, keep or cut?
I think keep. You keep Bradley McDougal, absolutely.
All right, so we got one, two, three keeps and two cuts. And I got three questions.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 12 after 12, Tom Wassel's burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
Enough with the "we got to protect the kids" nonsense.
It's mock draft time, people. Mel Kiper, Todd McShay, Bucky Brooks. Who else?
Daniel Jeremiah.
Jeremiah. Duh, yep. DJ. Yep.
I saw Bucky Brooks put something up on NFL.com today, putting Tua as his number one quarterback over Joe Burrow. Just trying to stir the pot there, or you think he actually believes that?
I think he actually believes it. I don't know that that's the hottest take. Joe Burrow had a record-setting kind of season, but Tua's still part of a blue-blood program, has still had a great college career. I know he's dealing with that injury, but the more recent reports are that he's recovering well from it. So I don't think that he's alone in thinking that potentially Tua's ceiling is higher.
And I would agree with everything that Stacey just said. His injury was kind of the ceiling part of Joe Burrow being, vaulted up to that number one guy by pretty much everybody. So when you talk about Tua and his abilities and his leadership skills and everything, it's easy to see why people would put Tua ahead of Joe Burrow. But I do think that Joe Burrow is going to be the first quarterback taken. I don't think that you're going to take a risk and take Tua in the sense that he's got so much injury history. Joe Burrow is the safe bet in this one.
Tua's game just looks like a college game to me, doesn't it?
Well, here's the thing.
I mean, it could be part of the system, too.
Well, it is, but he's been surrounded. I mean, he's got, let's put it in perspective, he's got three receivers three receivers that are going to be first round picks.
Yeah.
Three. So he's surrounded by a ton of talent. I don't say that to take anything away from Tua. I think he's an exceptional player, and I'm excited to see what he can do in the NFL, but I think those are things that you do have to consider as you're evaluating him.
Next.
Number two.
Do you guys think Russell Wilson will be playing baseball this year, or do you think he'll be concentrating on his hair? It's going to be one of those two things.
Concentrating on his hair?
I don't see the problem with the hair. I'm going to say, though, that he does spend some time with the Yankees. Is that a good guess?
In uniform?
I mean, I think for the excitement of it, the experience, that's the word I'm looking for. I don't think he's actually going to.
He's not going for
it. I have a hard time thinking his contract allows him to play extensively in another league, even if it's just spring training during the offseason. But I could believe that he gets out there.
I would agree with that. I don't know if he's going to participate like he did 2 years ago, where he actually got a chance to get into the batter's box and try and hit. I mean, that was pretty cool to see him up there and to see pretty much the entire clubhouse was lined up against the fence watching him hit and reacting to every single pitch. I don't know if we're going to see that again, but he'll definitely, I would imagine he'll go out there.
I want somebody to try that again. The Deion Sanders 30 for 30 on where he played in Miami as an Atlanta Falcon and then had to fly to Pittsburgh as a member of the Atlanta Braves for Game 5 of the playoffs. That is an insane story. I want to see somebody try and do that again.
It's absolutely incredible when you think about that.
Yeah, like you know what? When you, it's not just getting a guy to and from each venue. When you listen to Deion Sanders talk just about his own athleticism, and you consider his God-given gifts to be able to do both at least adequately. I mean, that is something worth being appreciated. It's incredible.
It is, and everybody is overshadowed by primetime being the football player, but oftentimes we do forget that he was a good baseball player, too.
He was. I remember the first time I ever heard of him, I was at Yankee Stadium. He was in center field. I'd never heard of him before. I was like, oh, okay, Deion Sanders. I think that they had just traded Ricky Henderson away to Oakland, so it opened up a spot for him. I was like, oh, okay, Deion Sanders, baseball player.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
Next.
Number three.
How does spring training make you feel? Does it make you feel anything at all?
I feel excited. Well, first of all,
here, wait, get down on my couch real quick.
Let me start with my very selfish feeling. My birthday's in spring, so I feel excited when spring training hits because I'm a selfish person.
Now, people get excited about the season that their birthday's in.
Thank you.
I do.
Well, my favorite season's fall. We don't need to get into it. But given that it's going to be our first time, the three of us covering a Mariners season together, I am very curious to see how we handle this one because it's so unique. This
poorly.
Well, no, Tom. This isn't a season where, you know, it's a World Series or bust. It's a season where there's a lot more of a unique approach you have to take with getting to know players more than you would have. A lot of these guys aren't people that you know. And so I'm excited about it.
Yeah, I would like to sit here and say I'm jacked up about it, but I'm not exactly in that mode. I'm curious, I guess is what I feel. I'm curious about what is the conversation that's going to happen around spring training. What are going to happen with some of these guys that are trying to make the roster? For example, like Justin Dunn, is he the guy that rounds out the rotation at the end of spring training and starts with the Mariners, or does he stay down with the minor leagues? But I'm also excited about the opportunity it brings because now we get to talk to Jared Kelenic at 1 o'clock. So that'll be exciting.
I'm psyched up for this season. I hear people just around this building whispering to one another, cracking jokes about how many times this team's going to be no hit. Come on, guys. Let's get in the spirit. These are your young Mariners.
You love baseball, though. When you and I...
No, I don't.
When Jake left us and you and I were out at T-Mobile... And we were doing the show for Mariners Media Day. You were another kind of excited seeing that field.
Tom wanted to go hit some fungos.
Yeah. Tom wanted to get out there for some BP. He was excited.
I have a love-hate relationship with baseball. Let's put it that way. It was my first love, for sure. But in recent years, the way the game has changed, it's annoyed me to the point where I just, at times, I just want to kick it to the curb.
In what ways? Not in what ways do you want to kick it to the curb, but in how what changes have bothered you?
The way the game is played, even the way the game is analyzed, the way the game is consumed. Like you can't just sit there and watch it and enjoy it anymore.
Why?
Because you just can't.
You just can't do it.
Is it because, can I guess?
Yeah.
When you say that, is it
fill
because,
in the blank for me.
Is it because of what Mike was saying yesterday, where he feels like the way that it's been is like a ton of home runs, not as many opportunities to field and double plays. And
you know what? Here's what it is.
It's kind of like a boomer bust.
Here's what it is. The hitter can't just go up there and eyeball the pitch and take a whack at it anymore. Every single pitch, every single swing is analyzed to death. And if you don't have some kind of background with that stuff, you really don't have any business talking about the game.
Do you think baseball analytics has made some fans feel alienated?
Yeah, I have. But like Mike was saying, I understand why they're there, because teams want to win. But I think it's turned baseball fans, every one of them, into like wannabe GMs.
Mm.
Like if you don't have a list of everybody's contract and what their past performance and all this stuff, then you really can't participate in a baseball conversation anymore. It's like, you know what? Hey, the Mariners have a chance to get Taijuan Walker. Oh, yeah, he had some potential a few years ago. Yeah, but if you get him, you know he's not going to make the team because they got to make room for this guy and this guy. It's like, all right, I'm sorry I brought it up.
How do you wish we'd talk about baseball?
In a relaxed way.
In a baseball kind of way?
Yeah.
It kind of feels like that, right?
Yeah, like the discussion around baseball is way too intense. It doesn't suit the nature of the sport.
That's interesting, Tom.
Well, on this show, we can have a little bit more of a relaxed approach on it.
We can,
because I think that's the part for us as Mariners fans. I think you do have to have a relaxed approach about this whole process. Having Taijuan Walker back into the building, I think, is awesome. Like, I'm excited to watch Taijuan Walker. Now, what are my expectations for him? They're not very high, but I love the idea of maybe coming and bringing him back at the right time, and maybe he is a part of this, part of this team for a couple years. I'm excited to watch, in a relaxed way with all these young players and see what's going to happen. You know,
I don't want to be mocked for suggesting that Kyle Seager should go the other way with his swing on occasion.
Right. You don't want someone to be like, well, actually, 75% of the time.
Because his launch angle is more favorable if he tries to pull the ball. If he wants to hit in the shift every time, he's going to hit 210 again.
Talking about sports should be something that we all feel like we can participate in. All of us are watching it. All of us are putting in the time to watch
baseball it. Baseball seems to be the most hostile.
I could see that. But not this year, Tom. That's why spring training is exciting, because we're going to talk about it.
Not on our watch.
All right, we're going to talk to Mike Sauk next, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
And we bring in Mike Sauk, as we do every single day at 12:30. Spring training underway, or at least we'll say the off season is over.
Yeah.
You've been down to Peoria many times. When you have gone down there, what's the one thing that you look forward to every year?
Culver's, definitely.
Say again?
Culver's Fast Foods out of Wisconsin. You can get a walleye fish sandwich there that sounds gross, but is actually very good. Mm. Kyle will tell
it's
you.
It's kind of gross.
It's not gross.
What's
it's really
it?
Good. It's a walleye fish sandwich.
Are you saying wildlife?
Walleye.
Yeah, I've never heard of
it's
that.
It's a freshwater fish out of the upper Midwest that they freeze, ship to Phoenix, Arizona.
I don't want
to
eat
batter
fish
and fry,
from Arizona.
And then Mike just devours it.
No.
It's really good.
They
have great fries. They got great chicken. They've got great burgers.
Great desserts.
And then they have like a cement mixer custard, frozen custard.
Oh, yeah.
That's the best part of
now you're talking.
And plus, Peoria is a cultural wasteland. There's nothing of value.
Excuse you, there's a Sonic there.
Yeah, exactly. It's Sonic. It's In-N-Out.
Chili's.
Yeah. Heck yeah.
When Kyle and I go down there in the past and we need to go upscale, we like look for an Applebee's.
You can drive a golf cart as a car.
It's a rough go of things.
Okay.
In terms of the baseball, is that what you were actually asking about?
I don't care.
Because generally the best part is getting fat for a week, need fast food, which I don't
playing
need here.
Golf.
I joke about it with Brock every year, but baseball at spring training is there's not that much that you can determine. It's so much more just about getting back into the speed of baseball, which is completely different from football. Right? Football's breakneck. It's incredibly fast-paced, and it's intense, and everything matters, and you get to training camp, and then there's hitting, and you examine each individual move to see what it might mean for the future, and then they play these preseason games, and every snap is under a microscope. And then when you kind of come off of that at the end of the beginning of February, and then a few weeks later you start spring training, and you have to just kind of get into the right, pace of baseball. Which is much more like Rick Riz's pace, right? You just kind of put yourself in Riz's shoes. You sit by the clubhouse. You chat with people about,
little Joey Cora.
You just sort of sit around and hang out and talk about baseball and think about the past and watch a little BP and talk about the sun and see if Rick's got any new shoes this year, because occasionally he'll come with, sweet sneakers or something. So you just kind of get into the pace, see who's throwing free and easy. Who's working on a new pitch, who got a new position. It's all very relaxed.
Mike, you're like a warm blanket over me today. This feels great.
But I love that.
Your voice got like a...
Yeah, that's my baseball. That's my spring training baseball voice.
It got more East Coast.
Very similar to his podcast voice.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. The great thing, though, about spring training is everybody's in a pretty good mood. The managers are in a good mood, right? There's no pressure on them. The pressure of a baseball season is immense. It's day after day. You're constantly making decisions, and each one of those decisions gets second and third guessed. You're dealing with injuries. The guys start fighting and don't like each other because they've been put into a small space together for the entirety of this year, and they're flying around, and you're tired and stressed out throughout the 162-game season. But in spring training, you go play golf in the afternoon. The manager does whatever. The players are all pretty happy. There's a lot of space. I mean, it's a good mood type of a place. And I think that is one of my favorite parts of spring training baseball.
Salk, I'm going to give you five names for the Seahawks. And I want you to, as quickly or as elegantly as you can, say what you would do with these guys. Because these guys are all cap casualty potentials for the Seahawks.
Okay.
And I'm going to list
them
all.
Give me an order. Give me one at a time.
All right. Justin Britt.
Cut him.
Okay.
I would have done that last year.
Okay. KJ Wright.
I would look to renegotiate on some sort of a smaller deal if he'd be willing to stick around. But if he wants to walk, I would let him. And it's not – I mean, I love KJ. Like, KJ's one of those guys you have to give the disclaimer about. Awesome guy. Everybody loves him. Community favorite. He'll probably return here to Seattle even if he ends up leaving for the end of his career.
No question.
But he's probably not a guy I want to pay what he's making right now.
Right. Justin Britt and KJ Wright have the two highest cap casualty potentials.
I'm probably going to let him go.
DJ Fluker.
I would keep DJ Fluker around depending on what I did on the other side. I've talked to you guys about this before. He's a good run blocking guard. He's not much of a pass blocking guard. And I would be rotating him in and out with somebody like Jamarco Jones. But I'd be okay with bringing DJ Fluker back on especially a prove it deal.
Okay. Ed Dixon.
I think that's done. I think that ship has sailed.
It should have been done yesterday.
I know. And I feel bad because I think he could have been a good player, but he's always hurt.
He's a great guy. Great guy. And I feel really
jacked.
Bad for him.
Yes. Absolutely jacked. Maybe too jacked. And that's why he keeps getting hurt.
Okay. The last one. This one isn't so simple, but Bradley McDougal.
Brock brought this one up yesterday. I'm not doing anything yet. I'm keeping Bradley McDougal around for now. Look, you don't have anyone else at that position right now. Mm-hmm. Marquise Blair, I think, has a future. And in talking to people around the team, I think they like what McDougal can bring. But the other two guys on your team right now are Lano Hill and Tedrick Thompson. And I don't think either of them are on an NFL roster next year. So you probably, for now, until you see what happens in free agency, obviously you got Diggs, but until you see what happens in free agency, I'm keeping McDougal around. I don't know whether he's a starter. I don't know if he ends up making the team. I don't know whether he's one of those guys that gets cut part of the way through training camp. But for now, I'm probably going to hang on to Bradley McDougal.
It's interesting because I think Bradley still brings a lot to the table. And, like you said, the depth part of it, one, I think, is crucial, especially with a young player, a Marquise Blair. You don't know what his availability is going to look like. And as we saw throughout the year, there were different injuries that happened at the safety position.
And he's a hitter, too. I mean,
absolutely.
If Blair is out there trying to hit everything as hard as he can, he's an injury risk just because of that fact. So, you know, he wasn't available for the final game of the year against the Packers, and it wasn't because of mental reasons. He was hurt, couldn't go in that game. And if he had been in there instead of Lano Hill, does he make that final play on Jimmy Graham and give Russell a chance to get the ball back? Yes, I'm going to say he does. I'm just going to go ahead and say
just to spite Lano.
100% yes, he does make that play, but he wasn't healthy, and so you got to guard against that.
What if he's just kind of one of those things where you have it so you're not as entertained by it? Like if the Seahawks were to add Bradley McDougal after hypothetically he had the year he had last year with a different team, and then he came in and all of a sudden you've got him and Quandre Diggs, don't you think that it would be, you'd be looking at it as, you'd be looking at it as like, oh, what an upgrade. But now because he's here, I think the question of, well, what could you have instead is in people's minds. But I think that it's something where you actually have a better situation with him here than you realize.
Yeah, almost a grass is always greener type situation. Mm-hmm. Look, at the end, I think you're right. I think the reason I'm going to say for now I'd hang on is they need an upgrade either at safety or at corner. And I think keeping him around allows you the flexibility to do one of those two things. And if you end up finding that safety instead of that corner and you got a legitimate upgrade over him, well, then either you let him go or you renegotiate some sort of a backup level deal and see what happens.
Well, and he can play both spots.
Yes.
So it's like valuable. If you get injuries at either, I mean, you just switch him up to free safety.
It's that easy.
It's that easy.
Just switch him up.
Just switch him up in there.
He's the multi-talented.
If you found out Russell Wilson was in spring training camp with somebody, anybody.
Well, isn't he? Isn't he there with the Yankees every year?
Again?
I assume so.
He didn't do it last year.
Oh, really?
I think he visited them, but he didn't participate.
He didn't participate?
Something tells me the team was like, hey, for $3 million, we're going to ask that you maybe.
I would actually like him to do that. I think he should. Anything that helps Russ stay in shape in the offseason is fine by me.
Even though they don't really do anything?
Well, they got to do something. I mean, just let them run lines or something. Run around the bases.
Run suicides?
Anything that keeps Russ from blowing up in the offseason, I'm a fan of.
He said talking about fried chicken sandwiches.
I love fried chicken sandwiches. I'm not a professional athlete. I can go to Culver's and eat a walleye fish sandwich. But, you know, Russ is a professional. He's got to, let him go to Florida.
Well, you'd feel comfortable knowing that he posted on Instagram, his Instagram stories, that he was working out with his trainer this morning.
That's what I like to hear.
What do you think of his hair?
You know, I'm not in the business of judging Russ's hair.
It's okay.
It's not for me. He's not growing that for me. He's growing that for Sierra. Whatever she likes is fine with me in the hair. I'm just concerned with Russell's speed. That's really the extent of it. As long as Russell's fast, I'm quiet. It's when Russell looks slow that I've got an issue. His hair can do whatever he wants.
Do you expect him to be fast again?
No.
Okay.
No, but I think he's in somewhat control of how fast that deteriorates.
Like if he eats wildebeest sandwiches every day.
You should try it's a walleye fish sandwich. Yeah. I think
wildebeest
like
sandwich is probably good. It's probably lean meat, high in protein.
That's true. That's what lions eat, and look at the kind of shape they're in.
They're in great shape.
Yeah.
Walleye is a lot different, though.
If you've ever had a walleye, I'm telling you, go to Culver's. You want to get a walleye fish sandwich, some of their curly fries. You probably want to get one of their cement mixer desserts.
Walk into Culver's at noon on a Thursday.
About it. Right,
by the way, you'll be the only person under the age of 75.
How far away is
there? Will be multiple people in there openly carrying weapons.
Kyle
that would be
I
really intimidating.
80-year-old man with his open gun.
Two holsters on each hip.
Then you realize you're coming out there from Seattle.
Phoenix is really different.
Well, all I know is that everyone has customized license plates. And also that everyone drives golf carts.
I thought you were going to say leased BMW.
Well, that's in Scottsdale, and it's a 30-year lease.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mike.
See you guys.
You know what? Coming up next, we're going to discuss something that Mike Salk brought up there. We're going to talk about rotating offensive linemen, and it's going to drive Jake Heaps absolutely berserk.
I can't wait.
That's next, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
Hey, Jake, let me ask you a question.
Okay, what do you got?
How do you feel about rotating offensive linemen?
Gosh.
Now,
Salk really, this got to you.
Struck a
nerve. Salk got to you. Have you not heard this from him before?
Well, this is why I trust him implicitly, because he's always got a leg up on people. I think this is a great idea, and especially when it comes to, specifically what he was talking about, when it comes to guys' strengths, DJ Fluker, if you were to hang on to him, being a better run blocker than a pass blocker, mm-hmm. Jamarco Jones, and being able to rotate those guys, because Fluker's not as good of a pass blocker, I think it makes some sense. The counter argument to it is, well, you're giving your play away, but you give your play away in many different ways.
Well, there is some ideas that you do have tendencies when you bring in certain running backs and when you bring in certain personnel groupings and bring in an extra lineman would make no difference. I understand that. I don't disagree with that concept. The part that I disagree with is, as an offensive lineman, it's a different position than receiver or running back or tight end. That's a position that you have to, more so than anyone else, be in more of a groove through the given game and have a feel for the speed of the game.
But that's not working.
And what do you mean it's not working?
Look at their offensive line. It's clearly not working. You got to try something different.
Oh, man, jeez.
This is where I am today.
This is the part where I think this is an interesting idea. If it was a full two-minute situation and you're saying, hey, we are going to pass the ball no matter what, I wouldn't mind going a full drive putting in Jamarco Jones over DJ Fluker. To me, that's not a bad idea because you're leaving that lineman in for the entirety of the drive. But rotating linemen in and out,
are you afraid
it's way too much of a task.
Won't be able to get on and off the
that
field
is part of it.
Fast
yes.
enough?
Yes, that is part of it. It would definitely slow them down. But I just think that that position in particular, it is much harder to have linemen be in the flow of the game and just be put on a dime, go out there and produce. I think it's much harder to do than other positions.
Why isn't that the same for defensive line? I mean, I know what my answer to this would be, but when people are like, well, you do so much rotation on the defensive line, mm-hmm. obviously you have like different assignments and stuff like that. But why is that so important on the offensive line that the guys are the same guys?
Well, one,
because the offense is dictating the pace of the game, I think.
Well, really what also it is offensive line is a group that you have to have tremendous chemistry with in terms of knowing how to pass off, how to communicate, how to call out protections, how to do all that. That requires a ton of chemistry. On the defensive line, your job is pretty simple. I'm either going to be holding my gap responsibility in the run game, or I'm going to be trying to get after the quarterback. And there are obviously more intricacies than what I'm making that out to be, but ultimately that's what your main job and priority is. And an offensive lineman, the technique, the speed of the game, you know, trying to stop those guys, it's much more of a transition than it is for a defensive lineman who's being more of the attacker, the aggressor, as the offensive lineman is in some aspects having to be passive and hold that defender away from the quarterback or the running back. It's a different flow.
The offensive line must move like a flock of birds as one.
Together.
Yes, they do. They do need to move as one.
And the center is the lead goose.
That's correct. Right. Yes, that is a fair analogy.
I'm Joey Hunt, and I am the lead goose.
You guys are making analogies that I think I'm gonna scoff at, but they're pretty good. They're pretty spot
good
on.
But,
I mean, when it comes down to it, the offense does dictate the pace of the game. The defense ultimately is responding to what they're doing. Like, those four defensive linemen aren't moving together like a flock of geese.
Yeah.
they've each got their own assignments, essentially, right?
Well, yeah.
And they're mm-hmm. reacting to what's going on, whereas the offensive line, they're all acting within a certain play design.
I was just thinking in terms of, like, explaining it for people that, like, Salk might have a question about, well, wait a minute, if a guy is tired, if I'm 320 pounds and I'm not good with, you know, pass protection versus run blocking, then what would it hurt to put someone else in there? And I understand that the big critique would be, well, you don't have the same chemistry, you could have miscommunication. But if you're doing that regularly enough where
like in practice or in games, if you're doing it,
right,
if you're making
where you
it
could
part
just
of
pop
your
someone
game.
In, then, you know, think of like switching from base defense to your nickel defense, that if you do it regularly enough, mm-hmm. those guys work together.
It's an interesting conversation. It's an interesting strategy that maybe at one point it does show up in the NFL at some point in time. I just don't anticipate that being anything. I don't anticipate that happening anytime soon.
Offensive line is complicated enough coming out of college right now and transitioning into NFL players without having to worry about rotating them in and out.
Right. You're just playing a very dangerous game. You're getting a little too cute in my mind. You're getting a little too cute in trying to rotate guys to play to their strengths for certain plays. You know, not just only, you know, tipping away what plays you're going to run, but also, you know, there's a lot more you know, it's more of a circus act to get your play off every single play if you're doing that on a given basis.
Can I ask a related question? Why do people say offensive line play in college is going down?
Because
it's not that it's going down. It's just that the types of offenses they're running aren't.
It is going down. So the reason
they don't have to teach them the same stuff they do in the NFL.
Correct, and that is the reason why it's going down. They're not as prepared to play in the NFL for those reasons. They're not required or asked to do the same things, the same type of blocking that is asked into the NFL. So they are able to, get away with doing less. It's the same thing for receivers. You know, like we talk about that transition. Why is it such a transition for receivers? Well, they're just not asked to be as detailed and to be as intricate as what they are at the next level because the game is different. The defenses, you know, guys are faster. The defenses are more, you know, on top of you and more assignment sound. So
is it just because most teams are running spread, and so that's the type of formations they have to learn?
Yes. Yeah,
and that's basically it?
Right. Spread is definitely a part of that. There's the system itself, an offensive system, is part of that. And it's also, you know, the combination of the system that they're running and the type of competition that they're going against. So you're not playing the greatest defenses and the greatest players every single week. And I think that ultimately hurts the transition aspect of it. But the game is getting farther and farther removed from what it looks like in the NFL versus college.
Stacey, where did you hear that Jared Kelnick likes chick flicks?
Paul Gallant yelled it to me while I was leaving the sports pit earlier today.
Is the term chick flicks still okay?
I would say
borderline
romance movies.
Romance movies.
I think rom-coms is the way they call it. Plus,
rom-coms.
Way more people enjoy that. Men and women enjoy them.
What?
Rom-coms.
Rom-coms. Chick flicks.
But they call them chick flicks for a reason. Or they did.
Well, probably because they were more marketed toward women.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think, you know what I also think is...
I mean, we're bringing this up to Kelnick for a reason. He must be some kind of exception.
I think
if it were totally normal, we wouldn't bring it up.
No, I think when people have a problem with it, it's because sometimes movies that aren't even rom-coms, if they have a female lead, they're called a chick flick. And they're like, hold up, wait a minute, this isn't even like a traditional chick flick. It's just a movie with a female lead. Like, you're telling me Tomb Raider is a chick flick? Get out of here with that. Laura Croft.
Is that the one? Oh, that's the one with...
Dude, I loved Tomb Raider.
What's Brad Pitt's
Tomb
wife's
great.
Name? What's her name?
Angelina Jolie. What's Brad Pitt's wife's name? Tom, throw it a break. I've had enough.
Okay, break. Go.